You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 16th of September 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. Well, unfortunately, I don't have Max Musson from Western Spring with me this week, so you've just got myself for the next hour, so we will have a music break halfway through. Normally, we would begin with a bit of Brexit news. But there really isn't that much happening at the moment with the Parliament being prorogued, being suspended for the next 5 weeks. And I have talked about it a little bit in the Daily Nationalist last week. The situation we are in now is that the Scottish judges have announced that Boris Johnson's proroguing of Parliament, which is a perfectly legal procedure that happens every time when the government wants to announce a new policy, which is what he's doing, the Scottish judges have announced that that's illegal because he's got a different reason for doing it. How they've worked out that he's got a different reason for doing it, I don't know, because he has got a new policy that he's going to be outlining as soon as he gets back with a Queen's speech and everything else. And that's not what the courts are for. The courts aren't actually there for deciding on what reasons why politicians are carrying out political procedures. It's absolutely ridiculous. It just shows you how partisan the Scottish legal system is and that it's more political than legal. The English judges have said it's a perfectly legal thing for him to do. And now it's going to the Supreme Court. And we're going to find out from the Supreme Court on Tuesday what they have to say about it. I'm fairly certain that they're going to say that it's a perfectly normal legal procedure and it's nothing to do with the courts, his reasoning for carrying it out. So we will probably be covering that on the Daily Nationalist anyway on Tuesday. Yeah, on Tuesday, I guess, because we've got Carolyn Yeager with us on Wednesday, which means that we can get into some of the news stories that have been going on in Britain over the last week, which is the reason for this show. And the first one that I want to get into concerns the RNLI. And the RNLI, the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, it's a very good institution. It rescues people at sea. It's British. It's not an international charity. And I think most people feel that when they give money to them, it's going to a good cause. You've got a lot of brave people that work for the RNLI that go out on those lifeboats. You've got people that are employed by them. And you've also got volunteers that risk their lives to go out there and save others. It's almost like a charity ambulance service for people that are at sea, which is why it's really rather concerning to hear that they are sending people's money abroad to foreigners. The Royal National Lifeboat Institution came under fire yesterday for spending millions of pounds on projects in foreign countries, including buying burkinis for Muslim women in Africa while slashing more than 100 jobs in the UK. Donations are being spent on swimsuits for devout Muslim women in Tanzania and on funding creches in Bangladesh, which the RNLI claims helps to prevent drowning overseas. But the charity's £189,000 a year chief executive, Mark Dowie, warned last week that it is facing some major challenges after making a loss of £6.3 million last year and announcing 135 job cuts. I mean, that's just unbelievable, isn't it? They're slashing 100 jobs over here while spending millions of pounds out of the public's money that they have donated to this national institution, and they're sending it off to Africa and to India for ridiculous things like buying swimsuits for Muslim women. You know, this is the sort of thing that will stop people from donating to this charity. I don't understand how they can get away with claiming that they are a national institution and that they are spending the money on rescuing British people that get into trouble out at sea and then diverting that money to Muslims in Africa. Demand for the RNLI's services is at record levels, with its lifeboats launched 8,964 times in the UK and Ireland last year. However, the charity intends to increase its annual spend on foreign projects by £400,000 this year. Its overseas spending has now soared from £1.13 million to £3.3 million over the past 5 years. So that's half the figure that they made a loss of last year. Half of that money that they actually lost last year, they've been handing over to foreigners. This wasn't in the outline of what the RNLI, of what it's there for. Tory MP Nigel Evans, who sits on the Commons International Development Committee, said, "The fact the RNLI are cutting staff in the UK but boosting spending on these international projects begs the question of what the priority of the organisation is. They are risking the reputation of the charity." They're destroying the reputation of the charity by doing this. He continues, "I would say 99% of the British public giving money to them have not the faintest idea that it is being diverted to projects overseas." Andrew Bridgen, a Tory MP, told The Times, "It is the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, not the Royal International Lifeboat Institution." The RNLI was founded in 1824 and has been accused of becoming obsessed with political correctness in recent years, leading to resignations among volunteers. What has political correctness got to do with a volunteer lifeboat service that goes out to rescue people? It's got nothing whatsoever to do with political correctness. Just have a listen to some of these things that they've been getting up to. "The entire crew at St Helier, Jersey, resigned after the coxswain was sacked following a dispute over a launch. The coxswain at Arbroath was sacked after failing to prevent a prank in which a crewman bared his buttocks." I mean, that's just the sort of typical thing that goes on fishing boats and lifeboats and building sites, and it's just people having a bit of fun, and they've sacked them all. "Two crewmen from Whitby, North Yorkshire, were dismissed last summer after tea mugs were found decorated with inappropriate material of a sexual nature." Well, you know, who is likely to see them? You're not really likely to get very many women that go out with the RNLI, because you need people with strong body strength. You need people that can carry the weight of another human being. So who is it that's going to be offended by seeing mugs with inappropriate material of a sexual nature? "The charity also came under fire after advertising for a £42,000 a year safeguarding officer to promote health, safety and well-being." And I guess that is code for diversity training. "The RNLI has talked about trying to influence policymakers and partners and lobbying the United Nations to reduce deaths at sea. But it's supposed to just be interested in what's going on in Britain. It's supposed to be there for people that go out on their windsurf boards or float out to sea in those inflatable dinghies that they have, or people in fishing boats that get into trouble. It's got nothing to do with the United Nations. It has a national team of health, safety and environment advisors and a diversity leadership group tasked with promoting the International Day Against Homophobia." Do they really have to start pushing this homosexualism on the lifeboats now? I mean, that's the last place where you'd expect to find homosexuals. And I doubt whether anybody would want to serve on a lifeboat with an active homosexual either. What is it? The Royal national institution for fighting against homophobia? Is that what it is? No, it's lifeboats. The RNLI used to limit its operations to the UK and Ireland, but its Charity Commission registration now lists areas covered as the British Isles, Tanzania, and Bangladesh. I mean, have they blackmailed them into sending money over there or something? The charity said 2% of its income went on overseas projects, and this did not have an impact on its domestic rescue services. But it has had an impact on its domestic rescue services. They've just said they've made a £6 million loss this year. They're having to get rid of 100 different jobs, even though the number of times the lifeboat has gone out has increased. So it is directly having an impact on domestic rescue services. How can they tell this barefaced lie here that sending this money overseas is not having an impact? Its Panjay project in Tanzania sends trainers to teach swimming in areas where drowning rates are high. What is the point in teaching Negroes how to swim? They don't have buoyant bodies. They sink in the water. They have a completely different bone structure to us. They have much smaller chest cavities to us. They don't have enough oxygen in their bodies to allow them to float. It's ridiculous trying to teach Negroes how to swim. They're not going to slow down the amount of people that drown over there. Why are they wasting the money doing that? If they want to go over there and teach Negroes how to swim, the Negroes over there are going to have to pay them. I mean, sure, you've got highly skilled, trained people in the RNLI, but they should be being paid by these foreigners if they want to be taught by them. Not being given it for free. Not the, you know, the old like little old ladies that pay out the money for the RNLI, their money being siphoned off to the Negroes in Africa. Its work includes giving out burkinis, costumes with a head covering, long-sleeved tunic and trousers to protect the modesty of Muslim women. How does that save people from drowning? Is that so that they can provide these costumes for these Muslims so that they can then learn to swim? Well, they wouldn't even be in the water if the RNLI hadn't bought these costumes for them. So surely it would be much safer and prevent deaths in the water if they just didn't even buy them these costumes to wear. Providing free creche places in Bangladesh stops children playing by rivers and reduces a child's risk of drowning by 82%, the charity added. Well, Bangladesh should be paying for that. Bangladesh should be paying for their own creches if they want women to go out working rather than looking after their children. That's the reason why people put them in a creche. They don't put them in a creche because, oh, we can't have them playing by the river. If the mother was there, she would be watching them. So they wouldn't be playing by the river, would they? The Isle of Man government is giving £57,855 to support the RNLI's work in Bangladesh, where it has a project teaching children to swim. In 2016, the charity announced it was providing training to Greek, German, Dutch and Swedish organisations. And you think, well, that's not so bad, at least they're European. But hang on a minute. Why are they providing training to these organisations? To help save migrants crossing from Turkey to Greece. To help save people breaking into Europe. To help people break the law. They're actually sending money to provide training to help people that are trying to break the law and break into Europe and steal the inheritance of the European people. I mean, that really takes the biscuit, doesn't it? A spokesman claimed the RNLI's founder, Sir William Hillary, has said its work on drowning prevention should be extended to the most remote quarters of the globe. And you can say, well, yes, that's okay. If they have these skills, then they should share them. But they should be paid for them. They shouldn't just be given out free by the British people. It's the same principle that says that, oh, the NHS should just be made available to everybody. I mean, it's bad enough that the government are doing this and are taking people's taxes and giving that money to foreigners, but to have charities that are supposed to be national, that are supposed to be contained within Britain, that are then sending their money and their skills overseas to foreigners and cutting back on the services that they provide in Britain is an absolute scandal. Mr. Dowie said, providing the very best service in the UK and Ireland remains our priority, but we also wish to use our expertise, knowledge and influence to help others save lives across the world, particularly where drowning rates are high. Yes, that's very noble. But it's not noble to be taking the money to fund that from innocent people that have paid into that charity thinking that it's going to go to help British people that get into trouble off the coasts of Britain. Everybody in Britain lives within, I don't know, 100 miles of the coast or whatever. We're known as a seafaring nation. It's quite right that we have this service here, and there is an argument that could be made that the government should actually be funding it, but we fund it because we are a charitable people. And they don't have these services around the rest of the world because they're not charitable people. Because why should they look at it as, why should we pay for somebody else to have this? I don't go to sea, so I don't need it. They're not charitable people. The non-white races don't have a tradition of charity. It's a white man's thing. Where are the Indian charities, the African charities? There aren't any. It's always the white man that digs into his pocket. And this is disgusting. I won't be donating to the RNLI again, knowing this. Because you do look at it, you think, well, it's got the word national in the title. It's national. That money's going to people that, in Britain, people that need that money to go out and save people's lives. And it's not. It's being wasted on the modesty of Negroes in Tanzania who want to be wearing burkinis. That's an absolute scandal. And the next news story that I've got here, again, this is scandalous, but it's to do with gender, always at the top of the news list. It seems every day that there is some kind of a scandal going on with transsexuals and with brainwashing children into thinking that there are more than one gender. And this is tied in with the NHS, and it's tied in with kindergartens. NHS bosses have warned nursery staff against referring to boys and girls, saying that gendered language can lead to violence or murder. That's right, they're trying to draw a link between nursery children, that's children under the age of 5, being referred to as boys and girls, and then what they are saying is that that can then lead to them murdering one another, I guess. I mean, how often do we hear of 4 or 5-year-olds murdering one another? And we certainly don't hear of them murdering one another because they were called a boy when they were a boy. And we need to be affirming children's gender at a very young age. We need to be doing more of that. We need to be encouraging boys to play with boys' toys and act like boys, and we need to encourage girls to play with girls' toys and act like girls, because we've got so much gender confusion out there. And what's the gender confusion caused by? It's caused by all the hormone disruptors in the environment, which has caused an increase in this confusion. So you would think that they would look at that and say, well, obviously we need to work hard to stop people being confused. Oh no, we'll say that it's perfectly natural and normal for people to be confused about what gender they are. So what they're actually doing is increasing it, they're encouraging it, they're celebrating it. And now you've got official proclamations coming from the medical service saying that it could lead to murder if you refer to little children as boys and girls. The guidelines from NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde, of course it would come from Scotland. I'm starting to think that Scotland is just full of socialists and communists. I know we've got some Scottish listeners, we've got some good nationalist Scottish listeners, but it does seem to me as if the majority of Scotland are crazy socialists. The guidelines from NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde are part of a pilot project aimed at creating gender-friendly nurseries. I mean, what are they saying there? Are they saying that the nurseries aren't friendly to the children? I mean, the children obviously have one gender or the other, and nobody's complained about them before. They got girls' toys in one area. They got the dollies and the prams, and in the other corner, you got the you got the trains and you got the footballs and you got the boys' toys. I mean, you couldn't imagine them being friendlier, to be honest. You can't imagine that that's going to lead to murder, teaching a boy to kick a football around than teaching a little girl to push a dolly around in the pram. I mean, I can imagine they say, well, this brainwashing might lead to these girls growing up and having an abortion, which obviously is murder, but I don't think that's what they're talking about here. Nursery staff are trained in matters that might lead to gender stereotypes, including how to talk to children and how to avoid unintentional segregation. Trained in matters that might lead to gender stereotypes. They're saying that it's wrong for boys to want to be boys. I mean, what is your stereotype of a boy? Well, what else is there other than boys and girls? There isn't anything else. And at the age of five, are they trying to say that you have transsexuals at the age of five? You don't have transsexuals at the age of five because five-year-olds haven't matured yet. They don't understand what sexual feelings are. A report on it by the Scottish NHS Authority states, "During the training, we will explore how attitudes and language are part of a sliding scale of violence that can result in physical violence and murder." So what they've done there is that they're conflating actual violence, actual physical hurt, just with the words that somebody uses. What they're saying is that if you call a boy, that could be as bad as maiming them, I guess, if that boy has been taught to think that they are a girl. I mean, it used to be that you were taught, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And all young children were taught that, and were taught to rise above it when people mock them or ridicule them. You rise above it. You learn to rise above it. You don't learn to take offence at it, which is what's going on today, because you just end up with a fractured society with everybody taking offence at everybody else and nobody developing a thick skin and able to actually go out into the world and enjoy it. You'd end up with narcissistic people that just go on and on about how terrible things are because their feelings have been hurt, and you end up with these tyrannical minorities that think that they have a right to have people arrested simply for saying something that they don't like. I mean, words can't harm people. You may get an instance where people think, I guess, when they're at school and they're being teased or they're being bullied, and words can hurt you when you're young. When you're very sensitive to these things, but you have to learn to just let it wash over you like water off a duck's back. You can't allow yourself to be defined by the way that other people who may or may not like you define you. You have to go out into the world, and you have to have a sense of self-belief, and you have to make your own way in the world. You can't just allow these things to get to you. And that's what they are encouraging here. They're encouraging them to allow this to get to them. And then they think it's perfectly fine to go out and act in violence against someone that uses words against them. This is why we have Negroes that will go out and murder people. And they'll say, well, he used a racial slur. That's why I did it. And, you know, we hear this all the time now. When you hear of these attacks, they will say, well, it's because I thought I heard a racial slur. And that's the end result of this. The violence that comes from this, the physical violence and murder, comes from teaching people that if they're referred to as a boy or a girl, then that's the equivalent of actual violence. Because if that's the equivalent of actual violence, then they might as well, just to defend themselves, use real violence. This is why we have these Antifa going out there and carrying out physical attacks on nationalists, and saying that it's just self-defense because the words the nationalists were using were the equivalent of actual violence. It's madness. It's the collapse of our society. The NHS guidance suggests staff consider their use of phrases such as "good morning, boys and girls," and asks, is it made clear to visitors to the nursery that no distinctions are made re boys and girls when being addressed? Imagine if you were a little boy and the carer or the teacher or whoever was running the nursery started referring to you as a little girl. You'd be really insulted. You'd be really insulted at that. And yet that seems to be what they are encouraging here. They don't want you to say things like good morning, boys and girls. What do they want you to say? Good morning, them? Do they want them to refer to the children as it? It? They're not an it. They're either a he or they're a she. They're a boy or a girl. If you call them it, it's the equivalent of talking about an animal that you don't know anything about. You don't know what gender the animal is, so you call it it. And how offensive is this? The document also urges staff to take issue with children and visitors if what they say is not gender-friendly. What do they mean by gender-friendly? Do they mean that if children refer to a little girl as being a little girl, that's not gender-friendly? Because they might think they're a boy? Because it might be a boy that's wearing girly clothes or something? Oh, it might be a homosexual five-year-old, and we can't possibly offend them by calling them him. Twisted. Absolutely twisted. A throwaway comment may seem harmless, but its impact can be huge and influence a child for the rest of its life, it states. Influenced for the rest of your life by the teacher saying, good morning, boys and girls, when the headmaster takes assembly when you're 6 years old. Traumatised. Traumatised for the rest of your life by being called a boy or a girl. However, last night, Piers Shepherd of the Family Education Trust criticised the move, saying parts of this have a very authoritarian tone, such as challenging parents if they use the wrong terms. Talking about violence ending in murder is very extreme. There seems to be a thought-policing attitude. Well, that's putting it mildly, isn't it? Having a go at the parents for calling their little boy a little boy. A spokesman for NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde said, at no point are staff asked to stop referring to children as boys or girls. The flexible approach means nurseries are free to decide how they wish to take it forward. Well, they're obviously being asked to do that. They're not being told they must stop referring to children as girls or boys, or they will lose their jobs, but they're being told that it's preferable not to refer to them as boys or girls, and that if they do, then it could lead to violence and murder. That's what they're telling them. They don't have to threaten them with losing their jobs. It's like this Marrakesh agreement that they've got, which guarantees that there will be free immigration right the way throughout Europe, and that it will be a hate crime to criticise immigration. Now, that's not actually law. And when that came out, they said, oh, it's not actually law. Nobody's going to be forced to go along with it. But everybody that signed that saying that they would make it into law. Of course, the Marrakesh Agreement and the EU thing that was based upon, that doesn't have the right to make laws in people's countries. But they were undertaking, all the people that signed that were undertaking to create that into law within their own countries, within their own language, and within their own legal structure. It's the same thing here. They may not be saying to them, well, you've got to stop referring to them as boys or girls, but they're saying to them that it's preferable not to, and this is something that's going right the way throughout the NHS. And, you know, it's no wonder when you look at children on the television and when they're talking about this, they look confused. They get confused and upset because they think, "What? Why am I being lied to? Why are the adults lying to me? Why are the grown-ups lying to me and telling me this obvious nonsense? It's not right. It's dreadful. I would hate to be growing up in the world the way that it is today. It's horrific. And it's no wonder that we've got children at the age of 4 years old, 5 years old, being given antidepressants. because everybody has to be drugged up to go along with what's going on. This is what happens when people take the wrong turn and they turn away from God and they turn away from nature and they break the natural law and they break the traditions because they think they know better. And this is where it ends up. It snowballs. It gets worse and worse, and more and more things, more and more consequences come from making that original wrong choice, like allowing divorce, and from allowing divorce, you get abortion, you get gay marriage, you get the permissive society, all of these things. None of those were predicted when they said, "Well, we'll just allow divorce. We'll just relax the divorce laws. We'll just allow the wives to divorce the husbands." They didn't expect that it would snowball, and 100 years later, we'd end up with homosexual marriage. But there is a link to that. It all comes from this thinking that we know better than our traditions, and we know better than our ancestors, and we know better than our religion and our religious laws. And don't forget, those religious laws, they supposedly came from God, who is eternal. So those laws are eternal. And we may not be able to see what the result is of breaking them, but that's because we're mortal. We can't see decades into the future what the end result of these things are going to be. Anyway, I've gone a little bit off course there. I think it's time to have a music break. And we haven't heard anything from Xerius for quite a while now. You remember that Xerius did have a very, very popular YouTube channel with lots of instrumental music on it, and that got removed. Even though all the music was instrumental, it got removed for hate speech, even though there was no speaking on any of the songs. Well, he's moved to BitChute now. He is still producing music, but not at the prolific rate that he was before. This is one of his new songs, anyway. It's called Blessed Are the Truth Tellers, and I'll be back in a few minutes. Okay, welcome back. In case you didn't recognise that music, since it's so long since we've heard from him, that was Xurious with Blessed Are the Truth Tellers. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about marriage now. It would have been good to have had Max on here, because I know he's been married for decades. He's got grandchildren. And that is the way things should be. Men should have a female partner. They should produce children. And the delight of the parents is in becoming grandparents and seeing their grandchildren. There is nothing that delights elderly people more than seeing their grandchildren. And these feminists that don't get married, get a career instead, they're going to be incredibly bitter and depressed once they get older and they realize that they've actually ignored the purpose for which they were created. They're going to feel very cheated and be very bitter. And this is why we have these crazy hags like Theresa May that get to be prime minister and make all these dreadful decisions, because they're childless and bitter and cheated. And yet they won't admit that. They won't say, I made a mistake and I followed feminism, because that would be embarrassing. That would mean losing face. So they double down and they encourage people to make the same mistakes that they did. It's very important that people get married. And the reason why I'm talking about this is because of the marriage rates within Britain. Marriage rates continue to fall, with just half of people in England and Wales being married. Now, I guess you could probably go back about 50 years, and it probably would have been about 90% of people that were still married. If you look at countries that have arranged marriage, if you look at India, just 10 years ago, 99% of the country were married. And they wouldn't split up. They wouldn't divorce. The idea of divorcing or leaving your husband, that just wasn't even countenanced. I mean, when the husband would die, they'd put them on the funeral pyre, and the wives would dive onto the funeral pyre as well. And they would kill themselves. They'd burn themselves alive. I forget what the name of the ritual was called, but apparently they didn't feel pain because they were married for life. And if you look back in our history, in our white history, look back to Roman times and probably beyond into all the way up to Anglo-Saxon times, people never married for lust. Marrying for lust is something that the animals did, something that the non-white races did, something that the savages did, was marry one another for lust. They would marry as part of a business transaction. They would marry their children off to other people that were in the same caste that they were in. They would marry their daughters off to people that were in the same class, and sometimes second or third cousins, so that the wealth that had been produced by the family was kept within the family. And the idea of marrying someone because you were attracted to them, that was really frowned upon. And there's a famous quote that if you were to allow women to marry who they wanted to marry, all the family fortune would just be squandered. It would be lost, because the women would far rather marry the stable hand rather than the lord of the manor. And that's very true. And, you know, this is why these marriages now fall apart, because people marry for lust and they fall in love. And if you fall in love, you fall out of love just as easily. When you have arranged marriages like they have in India, they may not know really what the person they're going to marry looks like. But within a few years and after having children, they do fall in love. And the love grows over the time that they are married. And it stays. Rather than seeing somebody, thinking you're in love with them, when really you are just in lust with them, and then falling out of lust. And also you have to have the idea that once you are married, that is a contract, that is a vow that you take for life. And there's no getting out of it. And part of that vow is also basically giving consent to have sex. Whenever the man wants it, the woman should give it. And whenever the woman wants it, the man should give it. So you can't really have rape within marriage, because that's what that vow is. That's what that marriage vow is vowing to give your body to the other person. And we've changed that. And we now say that people can be raped within marriage. We say that women can now get divorced. We encourage people to have sex before they are married, when I think it's something like 99% of all marriages where the couple didn't sleep together before getting married stay together. And the more partners you have, the more sexual partners you have before getting married, the more chances there are of splitting up. And if your parents have split up, then the chances of you not being able to keep a marriage together are very, very much higher. The damage that's done to children by their parents splitting up is absolutely phenomenal. And as much as they may really, really want the marriage to work when they grow up, the fact that their parents' marriage didn't work and that fell apart and they didn't have the stable home that they should have had, that affects them as an adult, and it makes them more likely to not be able to put up with the stresses and strains that there are of being married. We put across this romantic idea today that marriage is just going to be happiness all the time, and if a woman isn't happy, then she should just leave. When really, you should be taught that no, marriage is not going to be happiness all the time. A good marriage is something that you have to work hard at. And that's what the grandparents would teach the women before in the past. And the women had a central role in housekeeping and looking after the house, making sure that the house was decorated and clean and tidy, and that the husband had clean clothes and had dinner on the table when he came home. And the husband would go out and work, and he would work damn hard, and he would pay for the wife to be able to stay at home and pay for 10 children to be brought up. And bringing up those children would make that wife happy, because that she would be fulfilling her natural function. And what we have now is unhappy women that are not fulfilling their natural function, in some cases that are murdering their own children because they've been so brainwashed into thinking that their natural function doesn't define them, when in actual fact it does. You know, your function does define you. Form and function are intimately connected. And we end up with these crazy women by the time they get to 40 or 50, these crazy cat ladies. And it's all because we have given into selfish desire instead of honoring our father and our mother. That's what it actually means in the Ten Commandments when it says to honor your father and your mother. It means marry who you are told to marry. Marry who you are told to marry, and marry some, because then your parents aren't going to pick a bad person for you. They're not going to be blinded by lust. They're going to look at the in-laws to work out what the child is going to be like, because there's a good chance, if the in-laws are good, that the daughter is going to be similar. I mean, they say, well, you want to look at the woman's mother to know what she's going to be like. And if you're going out there looking for a partner yourself, you're going to be blinded by lust. You're going to fall in love with these prospective partners. But the parents wouldn't. And the parents would be looking for the things that they knew from experience would mean that they would make a suitable spouse for you. So I think it was a much, much more sensible system that we had in the past that did us well for thousands of years than the system that we have now, which was frowned upon and looked down upon as being little better than behaving like animals in the past. Let's have a look at some of these statistics. Figures released by the Office for National Statistics on Thursday revealed that of the population aged over 16 in the two countries, that's England and Wales, 50.5% were married in 2018, down from 51% in 2017. So going down at 0.5% a year. The number of people who are single and have never been married continues to grow, increasing to 16.7 million people, or 35%, more than one-third of the marriageable population. Who's going to look after them when they get old? 35% of the population is going to need looking after by the state, because we have encouraged women to go out to work, and we've encouraged men to behave like homosexuals and have as many partners as possible. So the marriages, they can't settle down into marriages. People don't understand how to settle down into a marriage. They're not likely to have children because of that, because they don't have the children. They don't have anyone to look after them when they get old. They don't have anyone to talk to. If you don't have people to talk to, you end up going senile. We are stacking up a serious problem for ourselves by allowing marriage to be destroyed like this. The proportion of those cohabiting, people who live with a partner but who are not married and have never been married, has also continued to increase to 10.4%. That's still better than people living on their own, I would suggest. All the marriage is nowadays is the wedding ceremony and these vows, and a lot of the time people just break their vows. They don't understand quite what a vow means. So I don't really see it's that different between people taking vows and people not. The important thing is how many partners that you have had. The ONS said of the figures that despite the decline in the proportion of marriages, it has not been consistent across all ages, with the majority of the decrease being concentrated between the age ranges of 20 to 34 years and 45 to 69 years. So that's probably people between 20 and 34 not getting married, and in 45 to 69, people getting divorced. This pattern may be explained by the increasing trend for people at younger ages to postpone marriage, and increasing numbers of people choosing not to get married at all. So they're going to wait until they're 34 before they get married. That's all their fertile years gone. The male swimmers aren't going to be as fit as they were, and the female fertility is not going to be as fit as it was, and you are far more likely to get people that, if they don't have some kind of deformity or problem like autism or learning difficulties, then they're still not going to be living up to the fullest potential that they would have done if it had been a male and female of, say, age 18 to 21, when you're at your most fertile and the offspring that you are going to produce are going to have the highest potential. A previous study by the ONS has found young Britons are undertaking important milestones in personal growth at an older age than in previous generations, including moving out of the parental home, not until 23, getting married, not until 32, and women having their first child, not until 29. While the latter two would appear to be the wrong way around, having children before getting married, the statistics agency noted in February that in the UK today, people in their 20s are more likely to have children than be married. And again, bear in mind this idea that children that are brought up in a broken home are far more likely to end up being divorced and end up having broken homes themselves when they get older. So what that is saying here is that there are more children living in broken homes today than there are children living with both their parents there. So they're missing out on having one of their parents. You need to have both a male and a female there when you are brought up. Otherwise, there are going to be serious issues. A woman cannot imitate a man. A woman is not going to be able to discipline a child in the same way that a man could. a man is not going to be able to provide the emotional support in the same way that a woman could to a child. These children are being their start in life is deficient. So it's no wonder that when they get to adults, they don't naturally know the best way to bring their children up. And it's almost like, well, there's also a link here with people just not growing up. I mean, they're not moving out of the parental home until they're 23, not getting married until they're 32. Another side of this is that they're very immature. They're still very immature. When you think years ago, people would be out working from the age of 14 and they would be starting their own families at the age of 16. And now you've got people not getting married until the age of 32, is still living at home at 23, and you've got people in their 20s that are just not mature enough to actually cope with the outside world. And then you get people that start fights, that stab one another, can't cope with losing an argument, can't cope with the world, basically, because they haven't had the proper training in the first place. They haven't had learned to have self-discipline because the fathers are not around. I mean, this is used as an excuse all the time for the reason why Negroes behave in the way that they do. And there's probably a good amount of truth to that. But at the same time, having a father around is not a natural way that the Negroes behave in the wilds anyway. They're polyamorous. They don't settle down with one partner. So yes, not having a father there does make them more crime prone and violent, but they're like that anyway. So having a father there or having them not, they're still likely to be like that. It's just the natural way that they are when you look at how things are in Africa. The new marriage statistics also include the number of same-sex marriages, with the ONS noting there had been a 78% increase in gay weddings between 2017 and 2018, increasing from around 68,000 to around 120,000. Notice we don't have any statistics here for the amount of divorces from these gay so-called weddings. We know that they don't stay with one person. We know that they engage in infidelity at a very high rate. David Cameron said that if we were to allow gay weddings, it would increase the amount of people that are getting married, and it would be good for marriage. How can it be good for marriage to redefine it as meaning sodomy and redefine it as no longer meaning fidelity? Statistics by the ONS revealed last month that the birth rate in England and Wales had fallen again and was at its lowest level since records began, lower than even during the Second World War, when conscription robbed the nation of huge numbers of young men. The fall was largely driven by lifestyle choices, where women are waiting longer to start a family and are affected by the inevitable conception problems associated with the rapidly falling rate of natural female fertility after around the age of 30. And of course, there's also the problem with male fertility as well, as I was saying there earlier. So we haven't just got people that aren't getting married, we've got people that aren't producing children either. It's almost like our nation has decided to commit suicide. It's decided to go against all natural law. It's decided to go against all of the intuition that we have as a race and do all that we can to harm ourselves and harm our children. The fertility rate in England and Wales in 2018 was just 1.7 children per woman, short of the 2.1 children needed to sustain a steady population. Britons are not alone in failing to meet that figure, with figures from March revealing that not one single EU country met the replacement level. And that is really important. And what is the government doing about it? Absolutely nothing. They're using it as an excuse to import foreigners into our country with a much higher fertility rate. They're not going to be a suitable replacement for us. That will just turn our country into a foreign colony. We need to be encouraging our own people to get married, and we need to be encouraging our own people to produce children. And there are countries that are doing that. Hungary is doing that. Poland is doing that. Russia is doing that. Slovakia is doing that. They are introducing measures to encourage people to get married and to encourage people to have children. Because they know that if you import foreigners into the country, they can't possibly be an adequate replacement for Hungarians or for Slovakians. Despite the fall in marriages and births, the UK continues to see a rise in population. How strange is that? What could possibly be causing that? Official analysis of government statistics finds that 82% of population growth in the 21st century is down to immigration. 82% of all the new growth is foreigners. That means within two generations, 82% of the population in Britain are going to be foreign. This is why something needs to be done about it. And I've got another article here which does say some of the things that could be done about it. And this is actually there's actually a conference that's going on at the moment, and it's actually being held by Viktor Orban in Budapest, and it's specifically to address this problem. The two-day summit was also attended by Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš and Serbia's President Aleksandar Vučić, who both said boosting birth rates was a priority for the long-term development of their countries. Vučić said his country was losing the equivalent of the population of a medium-sized town each year. Serbian people have one expression for negative population growth, the white plague, he said. Novak, in previous written responses to questions from The Guardian, said the Hungarian government doubled family spending between 2010 and 2019 with the goal of achieving a lasting turn in demographic processes by 2030. Fertility rates have gone up from 1.2 to 1.5 children per woman, according to government figures. This is still far from the 2.1 figure the UN says is the number required for a sustainable population. So maybe Britain could do that, just double the family spending, give out these incentives to the white families to produce, so we could get these figures back up again. Governments across Central Europe have introduced financial incentives for having children, with Poland introducing the 500 plus scheme, which pays parents 500 zloty a month per child from the second child onwards. The Polish scheme was extended in July this year to cover every child, including the first one, without any income threshold. So not even means tested. And 500 zloty is about £103 a month. Babiš said the Czech Republic also wanted to encourage big families. It is the third child which is of key importance. We do not wish to bribe anyone to have a third child, but we must provide support, primarily to families who voluntarily undertake a third child, he said. This year, the Hungarian government introduced a 10 million forint, that's £27,000, interest-free loan for families, which does not have to be paid back if the couple has three children. That's very similar to a National Socialist policy that you would get a third of your house paid for each child that you had, so that if you had three children, the whole mortgage would be paid off. If you have three children in Hungary, you get £27,000. Novak denied that this could put pressure on women to have children. Contrary to the unjustified and politically motivated accusations, we do not want to force anyone to have children. It is shocking that we are constantly attacked for trying to support families by all means available. So at least there are countries that are trying to do something about this. They have realized that we need to turn this around. We need to encourage people to stay married. We need to encourage people to produce more children. And these Central European countries, they are doing this specifically for the Hungarians and the Serbians. Obviously, they don't have that many foreigners in their countries anyway. But they are identifying the problem as being that there isn't going to be enough of their own people. I mean, I've got one other quote here, actually, from Viktor Orban. He said that it was conceivable, with a population of just under 10 million, that Hungary could simply disappear. It's not hard to imagine that there would be one single last man who has to turn the lights out, he said. If Europe is not going to be populated by Europeans in the future, and we take this as a given, then we are speaking about an exchange of populations to replace the population of Europeans with others. There are political forces in Europe who want a replacement of population for ideological or other reasons. And surprisingly, you had the former Australian Prime Minister there, Tony Abbott, who saluted the Hungarian leader for having the political courage to defy political correctness. Abbott said dying populations, not climate change, were the biggest threat to Western civilization and lashed out at Prince Harry and Meghan Markle for recent remarks that they would not have more than two children due to the effects on the environment. Having fewer children in Western countries will hardly make the climate better when so many children are being born elsewhere, said Abbott. So that's really encouraging. Really encouraging. I didn't know that Tony Abbott was concerned about these issues, the former Australian Prime Minister. And obviously, we've got these countries in Central Europe that are trying to do something about this. We just need to get our own country, Britain, to do something about this and identify it as being a problem. Because at the moment, they're just not identifying it as being a problem. As I say, David Cameron's way of dealing with the problem of not enough white people are getting married in Britain was to legalize gay marriage, as if gay marriage would be able to produce children, as if that was going to be a fruitful union. Because that's what it's about. That's what marriage is about. It's about producing grandchildren. It's about producing children, and it's about producing grandchildren. It's about having a family there to look after you when you get old. It's about starting a dynasty and intermarrying with another family and having an extended family. That's what it's all about. Life is not all about selfish materialism and acquiring possessions. It's about building and forming relationships and creating new life and setting a good example for that new life so that it goes on to make use of that good example by showing a further good example to their own new life that they create. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I will be back next Monday with more Aryan Britannia for you, hopefully with Max Musson. And of course, I do hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.